So good morning, everyone. Again, we'll start like yesterday with a short mindfulness breathing exercise, meditations, and followed by generating good intention, motivation. Again, make yourself comfortable. Relax. Try to relax physically, mentally. Feel the weight of your body on cushion. If possible, let go of all the thoughts of past, future, for a moment. As you breathe in and out naturally, normally, observe and be aware of your breath. Either the sensations on the nostril or the breath itself. As you breathe in, being aware you are breathing in. As you breathe out, being aware you are breathing out. Simply just observing and being aware. If you hear any sounds, if you have any feelings, sensations, or if any thoughts come up, notice those, be aware of those. And without entertaining those thoughts, feelings, gently bring back your focus, attentions, and awareness to the breath. Then reflect and contemplate how fortunate and lucky that to have this precious human rebirth with all the eight qualities. Free from all the obstacles and having gathered all the right condition to practice that Dharma. Which has incredible potentials if we can utilize it fully. How fortunate and lucky I am, even more so, to be alive today, now, to be here. So many human beings and other beings have died in this year, this month, this week, within these 24 hours. Many of them went to bed yesterday and they never woke up today. We could have been one of those who never woke up, but luckily, fortunately, we woke up and still alive. Among those who died, many of them were much more younger than us. Many of them were much more healthier than us. many of them were much more powerful and wealthy than us. But when the death comes, nothing could stop. Therefore, death could have come anywhere, anytime, in any form to anyone. It is incredible that we are still alive. Giving us more opportunity, time to make our life more meaningful, more beneficial, more helpful. Therefore, I must not waste this incredible opportunity and utilize it as much as I can. And the best way to make our life most meaningful and beneficial is to be able to help and contribute in reducing the suffering and cost of suffering of all sentient beings as much as we can. And to be able to help and contribute towards the happiness and cause of happiness of all sentient beings, directly, indirectly. And to be able to do that in most effective way, in most skillful way, according to the best need of individuals, without the limitation we have at the moment. I must actualize my full potential, the fully enlightened state, as quick as possible. In order to actualize that full potential, I must reduce and gradually eliminate all the afflictive emotion, all the obscurations. And develop all the realizations, all the positive state of minds, all the good qualities. And to be able to do that, I must practice, meditate correctly, continuously. For that, I have to be reminded of those practices, meditations, again and again. By listening, reading, engaging in discussion, reflection, contemplation, so forth. For that very reason that I'm going to listen and engage in discussions and contemplations. So that I might be reminded of those practices and get inspired to do the practice so that my life become even more beneficial, more helpful for oneself and for others. Then we'll go to the page number 27. Sāṅgye ca dāṅso ye ca nāṁ lā chāṅ ca pātto dāne kyaṁ su ce dāgye ca se ye be so nāṁ ke dola pence sāṅgye dūpa sho Sāṅgye ca dāṅso ye ca nāṁ lā chāṅ ca pātto dāne kyaṁ su ce dāgī chūshē gī bē sō nāṁ gī dōlā pēncē sāṅgī dūpā shū sāṅgī chū tāṅ chū gī chū nāṁ lā chāṅ chū pā tū tāni kyāp sū chē dāgī chūshē gī bē sō nāṁ gī dōlā pēncē sāṅgī dūpā shū Kangye tuje nye son ne, ta wa tong je pang be je, ta ve chun ne ten je be, ko tam te da cha su. So just to summarize what we have discussed so far yesterday. So we discussed about first, when we are serious about our practice and when we are ready, then finding the qualified spiritual master teachers, and on the basis of finding the qualified spiritual master, then relying on the master properly, correctly, through thoughts and actions, and having relied on the spiritual masters, then through their advice, teachings, instructions, then training our mind, into the gradual lumbering practices, so that we can have a positive transformations. And first starting with recognizing this precious human rebirth, all the eight qualities, and understanding how much potential that we possess. The potential for the happiness, this life, all the future lives, liberation, fully enlightenment. The potential not only to make positive differences, change in our life, but the potential to make a positive differences, change in the life of others, other sentient beings as well. Recognizing that, understanding that, that potential. Also understanding and knowing that not only it has incredible potential, but it is difficult to obtain again in the future if we don't utilize it while we have this precious human life at the moment. It's not easy to have such precious human life in the future. So by with that recognizing, understanding that we have to make most of it and take essence from this life while we still have the jewel of this precious human life in our hand at the moment. And not only we need to make most of it and most best of it, we have to do it before the death comes. because death is certain. No one can escape the death. We all have to face the death. And because time of death is so uncertain, we never know when the death we might encounter the death. Just as everyone who died, almost most of them were kind of shocked and surprised by the death because they were not expecting. Some of them might be expecting death, but not at that time. In the same way, it could shock us, surprise us, by coming sooner than we expected, or coming sooner than we are ready, coming sooner than we feel prepared. So therefore, so sense of time of death is so uncertain, not only we need to make our life meaningful while we are alive, but right now to practice the Dharma without postponing immediately. And since at the time of death, what really helps us is our practice, our actions, our mind, our karma, nothing else. The only thing that helps at the time of death and after the death is our karma, positive karma, our practice, our positive state of mind. So with that kind of understanding, realization, making a strong effort to make the practice, the Dharma, as the priority most important in our life. So thereby giving more effort, more time, more energy towards the practice as much as possible. So from Buddhist point of view, after the death, the life doesn't end after the death, but it continues. And then we will take rebirth in one of the, if we are still in samsara, if we are still under the influence of the delusions, then of course our rebirth will be in one of those six realms, within the samsara realms, either higher rebirth or lower realms, depending on how strong our positive karma and negative karma are, what kind of life we live when we are still alive, and at the time of death, how our mind is affected, positively or negatively, depending on all those different conditions, then either we will have high rebirth or lower rebirth. And if we are born in a lower rebirth, the suffering is much more intense. And the opportunity to practice the Dharma is very limited, if not impossible. And so therefore, with that understanding, how unbearable the suffering of lower realm is, even just to hear is sometimes scary. And then, of course, the opportunity to grow and practice is, again, very limited. With that understanding, cultivating a strong wish to not to be born in such place and to be free from being born in lower realms and to have a higher rebirth so that we can continue our practice if we don't make progress in this life, so that we continue to make more progress in next life and life after that. So therefore, with a strong wish to free from that lower realms, taking refuge to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. And having taken refuge to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, then not only take a refuge, then following the following the, the precept or the advice of the taking refuge, which means living our life. As much as possible, according to the ethical morality of engaging 10 virtuous actions and refraining from 10 non-virtuous actions as much as possible. And living our life as much as possible, not to harm others, trying to help others, at least not harm others. So that is the very basic commitment or precept of taking refuge to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So trying to live our life according to that as much as possible. So I think more or less we discuss up to that. And even we are free from the lower realms, and even we are born in a samsara, higher birth, as long as we are in samsara, we are still not free from all the problems, sufferings. And so then the next, cultivating a strong wish, intention, will to not only free from the lower realms, but to free from the samsara itself by understanding as long as we are in samsara, there is no real happiness, there is no real lasting happiness. Joy, peace, freedom. So in order to have true lasting happiness, freedom, liberations, then we need to free from the samsara and the cause and condition which tied up us in samsara, samsaric state. So then next two verse is training in the middle scope. So the first of that, seeking samsaric pleasure, which is on page number 138, seeking samsaric pleasure is the door to all the sufferings. They are uncertain and cannot be relied upon. Recognizing those shortcomings, please bless me to generate strong wish for the bliss of liberations. So in order to reach the state of true lasting happiness, freedom and liberations, the bliss of the liberation and freedom, of course we need to engage into the practice path which lead to that state. And in order to engage into the practice, the path which lead to that state, of course, first you need to have the determination, the inspirations, the intention to do that. If you don't have intentions, inspirations or aspirations, then of course you wouldn't practice. If you don't practice, of course you wouldn't reach that state. And in order to have that inspiration, then we have to have a better understanding of shortcoming of the samsara and the benefit of the liberations, nirvana. Disadvantage of samsara and advantage of liberation, nirvana. And in order to have that understanding that realization, then of course we need to reflect, contemplate, and have an understanding of the nature of samsara. So again, in the teachings, the nature of samsara is explained from many different point of view. by reflecting on the, contemplating on the 8 sufferings, 6 sufferings, three different sufferings in general, and then individual suffering of 6 realms individually, and so forth. I thought maybe we'll go very roughly on the 6 sufferings. Little bit. The one of the among that 6 general suffering is the suffering of uncertainty. As long as our life, first of all, I could explain this way. When we say samsara, we are not talking about something, the environment. Sometimes we tend to have that. Getting out of samsara means getting out of this planet, this world. That is, again, not fully understanding what samsara means. That is not this escaping or liberating from this planet, this world, is not liberating from samsara. That is not what samsara. Samsara can refer to, it can be explained maybe in that way, or refer to our this very state of being, or our body and mind, which is under the influence or control by the karma and delusions. That is samsara. As long as our body and mind is under the control or under the influence of karma and delusions, then that is samsaric state. Such being or such state is samsaric state. No matter which part of the planet or outside of the planet, as long as your state of being is influenced by that karma and delusions. Another way of understanding karma is the process of circling within the samsaric realms from one state to another state. From having from taking rebirth in the God realms or the body of God and mind to the next rebirth as a human beings or next rebirth as a hell beings or from next rebirth to animal and so forth. The whole process of circling from one rebirth to another rebirth, endlessly, from one rebirth to another rebirth within this 6 cycle, 6 realms, that again we can understand as a samsara. That's the process. So, on the other hand, liberation, nirvana, doesn't mean some kind of, again, some paradise waiting there. some places out of this planet. But when our mind is free from all the delusions, totally free from the delusions, that is when nirvana. So we can achieve nirvana within this planet, within this world, within this birthplace. And once we have achieved liberation, when we are totally free from all these delusions, then our relationship with the world is totally different from our relationship at the moment. Our experience with the same world is very different from the world we experience at the moment. Externally, nothing has changed. Same person, same environment, same weather, same food. But our experience with everything totally changed. There is no more disappointment. There is no more sad, pain. There is total calm, peace, bliss, joy, regardless of whatever change is happening outside, regardless of whatever that you encounter. So, samsara and nirvana is not something external, it is internal. Samsara and nirvana are creation of our own mind. Samsara is created by our unsubdued, afflictive, deluded mind. Whereas our nirvana, liberation, is created by our undiluted wisdom mind. So on the basis of that, so since so whatever is samsaric nature brings more pain, more sufferings, more unpleasant experience. That being the case, then maybe on the basis of that, then we can discuss maybe a little bit of the sixth type of the suffering that we experience in samsaric state. So the first one is the suffering of uncertainty. If we look in the life of people around us, or even in our life, there is so much uncertainty. So much uncertainty. We can see at the very beginning of life, someone who is very rich become very poor at the end of their life. Someone who is very poor at the end of beginning of life can become very rich at the end of life. It changes all the time, so uncertain. Experiences. At the very beginning of your life, you might be a very positive, optimistic person. At the end of life, you become very depressing, very pessimistic person, and vice versa. At the very beginning, your outlook, your experience, your outlook with the world is a negative. At the later part of your life, it transforms and changes, positive. Not only lifetime, And then, of course, enemy and friend, again, constantly changing. Someone who is enemy or whom you are conflict at the beginning of your life, at the end, later part of your life, they become friends or strangers. And someone who is stranger or friend at the very beginning, again, at later part, it become enemy, so forth. Not only within life, within the minutes, we change. One moment, I'm happy. Next moment, I'm sad. One moment, I'm so sad. One moment, I'm so happy. One moment, I'm so excited. One moment, I'm so depressed. Our experience. One moment, you have so much compassion, caring. Second moment, you are so angry. And so much anger, hatred with that same person in one moment. So uncertain. Everything is so changing, so constantly, so fast, even. Not only it changes because we are in samsaric state, then we suffer due to those changes. Even those changes happen, if we are not in samsaric state, if we are not under the influence of delusion, if we are, let's say, arhat, or Buddha, of course, external thing changes, but it doesn't affect you. That uncertainty doesn't affect you in a negative way. But when we are in samsara, and when those changes happen, then it affects us in a very negative way. It makes us much, it brings us so much pain, so much suffering to see those changes. That uncertainty, so much fear due to those uncertainty, so much anxiety, worries due to those uncertainty, isn't it? But if we have reached nirvana, liberation, then, of course, our experience doesn't change like now. We will always have constant calm, peace, happiness, joy. No matter how others change, react, still our reaction will be same to them. So there is stability, peace, calmness. Then the suffering of dissatisfaction or uncontent. Uncontent or discontent? Discontent. Dissatisfaction and discontent. As long as we are in samsaric state, as long as our life is influenced by delusions, attachment, nothing satisfies you. Nothing gives you contentment. If we have one house, we want two houses. If we have two houses, we want four houses. If we have four houses, we want eight houses. And that keeps on growing. Never feel that we have enough, satisfied, content. Isn't it? When you don't have one house, you feel, if I can have a small house, that is enough. Once you have thing, you think it is not enough because you need a little bigger. Maybe one more bedroom when the guests come and this and that. And when you have that, or maybe you want something with a lawn, you know, this bigger, more. Then maybe you want summer, second home, summer home, and all. It just increases. Never felt When you have this, you feel if you have this, you will be satisfied, content, happy. But when you have this, for a few moments, you feel satisfied, happy. But then, because of our attachment, then again it increases. Then you are not more, you are not happy anymore. You are not satisfied anymore. You want better and more. And that keeps on going. Even you are billionaire, trillionaire, zillionaire, still you are not satisfied, you still want more. Even you conquer this world, still you are not satisfied, you want to conquer other planet. I mean, it is nothing complicating philosophy, theory. We just have to observe our own feelings. It's clear. Our desire, our attachment, our craving have no end. As long as we follow our desire, our craving, our attachments, you can never find true peace, feeling that is enough. Sense of feeling satisfied, content. And because of that, there is constant suffering, pain, because we are constantly running after those objects of our craving, attachment, not being satisfied, hoping that another one will give you more satisfactions, happiness, running after that. And then when you get that, sometimes we don't get it, then we are more pain, more suffering. You try your so much effort, you didn't get it. More disappointed, more pain, more suffering. Even you do get it, again, after some time, you are not happy, satisfied. Again, you want something else, and you run after that, and that is all very tiring, isn't it? It's very tiring, running your whole life to find something which you are able to never find. It's like you are trying to get if I have something, very bottom of thing, which because I believe there is that true happiness, satisfactions. And then the moment I get there, then I found out that wasn't the thing that I was looking for. It become disillusions. And then the things which you are looking for seem a little further, and you started running it, you reach there, then you find it wasn't that, it looks a little further there, and that is all our life. Each time it seems there, you reach there, and then you find it was not there, and it was there, and that seems to be constant. And that is why we don't enjoy our life. Why we don't enjoy our life? Why we couldn't find really peace, calm, joy, because always running like that. So that is the suffering of never satisfying. As long as we are following our attachment, craving. But once we are able to find, once we are able to let go of the attachment, the craving, the desire, and when we find sense of contentment, sense of satisfaction, not from outside, but from within, then that is when you begin to find peace, satisfaction, happiness. Then you are no more running after the object. It's no more tiring game. Until then, it's a very tiring game. So, external object by itself can never give you true satisfactions, true contentment. True satisfaction, true contentment, true happiness has to come from within. So that is why the suffering of the suffering of having to let go of the body, the physical body, which we are so attached to, again and again. Again, we are so attached to our body and we don't want to let go of this body, but then death comes and it takes away. And again, we get new body in a new realms, in a new rebirth. Again, we started building up attachment to that body, cherish that body, and try to sustain, maintain with every effort like that. And then again, we cannot hold it again. Then again, we have to give up. Death comes, and again, it takes away. Again, we have new body, and again, we started having that kind of same kind of starting to build up attachment to our body, and then that, and that keep on going. Again, is kind of tiring. You build up in such way, and then you cannot hold it, and you have to let it go. And then you get a new body, which you don't know. And the suffering of having to take rebirth again and again. Never ending, endlessly. As long as our life, as long as our being is in samsara, meaning influenced by the delusion karma, then there is no end to the taking rebirth. Not only taking rebirth, if we have some control and choices of what kind of rebirth we want, that will have made much more easier. I want to come in the very happy, peaceful family. I want to come into the most peaceful, most prosperity place in the world. I want to come in a family where we have incredible love, caring, relationship, all these things, best education, everything. But we don't have that choice, unfortunately. As long as karma, we are under the influence of karma, our actions, and delusions, kind of throw us in a different rebirth, which we have no control, which we can't make choices, and never know where it's going to throw up, better place or worse place. Same. So again, constantly is kind of taking a rebirth, new life in unknown world, every time unknown. You begin to know a little bit as you grow, then suddenly again you are thrown in some unknown. It's like you imagine you come to a city where you are totally lost, okay? Totally lost because you have no idea. It's a big city, crowded, not knowing exactly the culture, the function, everything. And slowly you build up to know it. The moment you are beginning to know and feel good, now I know how to get around and feeling a little bit kind of starting to, then you are thrown in another city. And that is constantly like that. As long as our life is under the influence of that, is exactly what happens. Life after life, life after life. Unknown suffering state. From one unknown suffering state to another unknown suffering state. And the suffering of loneliness, the suffering of being born alone and dying alone. Even though it is in unknown cities, if we had another friends to go together, I think we feel a little bit more secure, you know. Even though both of us are totally new in this city, but still I will feel much more comfortable, secure, less worried, because I have someone. Same way, if we know that there is someone who is going together with us when we die to the unknown world, the unknown new rebirth, unknown samsaric new rebirth, I guess maybe there is much more calmness, peacefulness, less worry, less fear. But that is not the case. We go ourselves alone. When we die. And then same thing, when you come to the new, totally new world, as a rebirth, totally exposed to totally unknown new world. But again, if there is someone together, and where we know each other, again, maybe that will give us much more peace, less fear, less worries, and so forth. But again, that is the thing. And of course, the modern world, while we are still alive, the suffering of loneliness is getting more and more. This new phenomena seems to be happening. A lot of depression seems to come out of that due to feeling of loneliness. Again, I think it is all about craving, desire, I think. The feeling of need to be with someone, somewhere. So inside, we feel that I need to be outside, somewhere, with someone. And not being able to do that is feeling lonely. Because like some of those practitioners, they live by themselves with no interaction with anyone. In those caves, mountains, they don't have that feeling of loneliness. They have joy. Not the depression, but actually joy of being in that state, because they are in a different mental state. They are in a different mental state, and their choice, they choose to be in that state, in that kind of environment where they don't want to interact with others for that purpose of practice. So I think for those people, I think even they don't have interaction with anyone, they don't feel lonely and depressed. It doesn't mean everyone. I think it is possible some of the practitioners who are not strong practitioners, it could lead to that kind of thing, possible sometime. But I think those who are who are able to do the practice properly in correct way, they don't feel that way. So instead of that, there is joy. So again, I think it's the desired craving, you know. Mainly it's the desired craving, the delusions. And the suffering of separating, being separated. Being separated from this body, being separated from our possessions, being separated from everything that we are attached to, our families, friends, everyone. As long as Buddha said, everything which has been accumulated or collected will eventually disperse, get exhausted. Everything that has come together, everything that has been made together, come together, would eventually be separated. And again, these are fact, reality. No matter how much we try to hold together, eventually we cannot stop from being separated. Everything which is comes to the top will fall eventually. Same thing that we see individual level or on bigger level. The most powerful countries at one certain period in the history, eventually they become weak. Another one become more stronger. Financially, economically, that happens. As well. So, the nature of, by nature is like that, but then due to our samsaric state, not being able to accept that is the what makes painful. Fall and raise, the suffering of falling and raising. From less powerful to most powerful, from most powerful to less powerful. And again, we can see that constantly happening. Yeah. Constantly happening on bigger level, on bigger picture and smaller pictures. So, by contemplating on that, those shortcomings, what we understand is that we shouldn't be so craving and attached to those samsaric pleasure, samsaric excellence, samsaric prosperity, because those are so unreliable because of all these changes. So unreliable, unstable. Because the more we believe, the more we have, the more craving we have, the more attachment we have, and the more we have, the more belief we have, that so such samsaric prosperity, such samsaric excellence, those samsaric pleasure give us true satisfaction, happiness, the more disappointment we become, the more painful it leads to. And then we get so distracted. We get so distracted running after this samsaric pleasure, samsaric happiness, samsaric excellence, prosperity. Therefore, we get more and more distant from true lasting happiness of liberations, nirvana. The more we get distracted towards this, if you follow one path, then you lead to true, lasting happiness of nirvana, liberations. True, lasting, which is not fluctuating like the samsaric pleasure. Such the pleasure of nirvana or liberation is not fluctuating, it's steady, stable. Whereas samsaric pleasure is up and down, so fluctuating all the time. So if we follow this path, we will reach that, but then when we get distracted in samsaric pleasure, prosperity, happiness, then our direction goes in different directions. We lose the track of that happiness. So the more we believe that such samsaric pleasure bring us happiness, joy, satisfaction, the more we get distracted. The more desire, more craving we have on that, the more we get distracted. Why do we have craving and desire and attachment, those samsaric pleasure? Because there is still this kind of belief that they can give us happiness, joy. Not understanding shortcoming of those samsaric pleasure, prosperity and suffering. Not truly understand the true nature. If we truly understand their true nature, how unstable, how unreliable they are, then we will be less attached, less craving. Less craving, less attachment, less distraction towards that. That means we are able to focus more on the directions in the path that lead to the liberations. So therefore is extremely important, crucial to have that understanding, the shortcoming, the faults of samsara, the shortcoming of samsara or samsaric pleasure, the disadvantage of samsaric pleasure, prosperity, happiness, the understanding of true nature of samsara. Maybe I should explain a little bit this. The three suffering, the suffering of pain, the suffering of change, suffering of all pervasive. So suffering of pain is easy. We all know it is suffering, and we try to overcome that. Even the animals know that, and they try to overcome that. When we have strong headache, hunger, thirst, pain here and there. So that is quite obvious pain, sufferings. We know it is suffering, pain. We try to overcome that. And as I said, even the animals know that, and they try to overcome that. The suffering of change is the way samsaric pleasure. Samsaric pleasure, we think, we believe is the happiness, joy, pleasure. Actually, by nature, is not real happiness, true happiness. By nature, is in the more nature of suffering, pain. And that is why the more you experience is, instead of leading to more happiness and joy, eventually it lead to more dissatisfactions and sometimes disappointment and sometimes unhappy. So it doesn't lead to more and more happiness as you enjoy more. So that shows by nature is not a happiness. Then suffering of all pervasive is the state of being which is under the influence of the delusion and karma. Any state of being which is under the influence of control of delusion and karma is the all-pervasive suffering. So as long as we are under the influence or control of delusion and the karma, of course, there is no real freedom. If there is no real freedom, that is samsara, that is painful, that is suffering state. At the moment, we only think of freedom in external way. But we don't think internal. If you think internal, then internally same way, when delusions take away our freedom, and the delusions control our mind, and that mind control ourselves. Instead of us being able to control our mind. At least that is the case at the moment, as long as we're in samsara. So that means someone, when someone is totally under the influence of delusion, then absolutely there is no real peace, calm, happiness, joy, regardless whatever they have externally. Someone might be most richest person in the world, most famous person in the world. Who have most friends in the world, externally everything that you can think of, all the good things that you can think of externally, everything that he or she has. But if he or her mind is disturbed by anger, jealousy, pride, craving, he or she has no peace inside. Externally, he or she looks good, but internally, so much disturbance, so much pain, so much suffering. And we don't have to look someone, we have to look ourselves, our state of mind. How do we feel when we are in that state, those negative states? Despite we have so much externally. So that is what all this pervasive suffering is, the third part of suffering. So I think that is very important to understand this suffering in order to have a strong determination, will, intention to free from the whole samsara and the delusions, as well as to have compassion, bodhicitta, to each and every sentient beings. So that is what so seeking samsara pleasure is root to all the suffering, because it leads to more pain, more suffering, more and as we mentioned, all these samsaric pleasures are so uncertain, unreliable, unstable. And by understanding those shortcomings, then please requesting the gurus, the buddhas, bodhisattvas to bless me to generate strong wish to achieve the bliss of liberation, the happiness of liberations. Then first verse is to generate a wish to free from the samsara itself, not being attached to any of the six realms, not being attached to any of the six realms, not being attached to any of the samsaric pleasure, then cultivating a strong wish to free from the whole samsara, all the six realms, and with that wish, cultivating strong will and determination to do that. Then second verse is cultivating aspirations to actualize the path which lead to that the state of liberation or nirvana, the path which lead us to that. So that is the. So maybe I can take one or two questions, if there is. Yes, please.
Maybe it seems silly, I don't know.
Well, let me hear it and see whether it is silly or not.
So. You seem to have extra guest room. It's desire. I think it's compassion.
It depends.
So, from my point of view, I'm helping somebody to be comfortable. Because I do charity work. Sometimes I host people for weekends, students. I don't charge them anything. And I cook for them, bring them whatever. So is this desire? I desire to help people. On the other hand, it's compassion. Because it makes them happy. And it's a different lifestyle. I mean,
mm-hmm.
From what, as a student, you saw these are foreigners, I mean, come to study here, any country. So you think it's a desire on my part to be, or is it craving to have an extra 1-2 rooms? Or is it compassion? I can't draw a line, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I know what you mean, but sometimes I'm reminded by my husband, it's my desire to have a little bit more. But I think it's, to me, I see it as on my part to help people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, it's a practice. I don't know if it's right or wrong. If you really just stop and then my mind is free from the disturbances, thinking that these people are suffering, give them extra happiness, a bit of comfort. I don't know which is right, which is wrong.
Did everyone hear the questions? Yeah? It's good to know that next time I can come to the guest house. To live there. No, I'm just giving it again. Of course, that could be compassion, because if you are doing something for someone, of course, it will be more hard for me to. Then I think we have to be we have to check our own minds or our own intention, motivations. So that would be, I think, the best way to understand which emotions is what, whether it's a desire, craving, or whether it's compassion. I think the best way is to understand what those emotions and then look within ourselves more with clarity and that to find out more. But of course, I think someone offering having an extra guest house to make it to be able to offer that kind of place for others, of course, is good and compassion.
It does
No, I think if you can help, I think that is wonderful, you know. If you. Yeah, yeah. So I think it is. I think. It depends on individuals. I think. I I think it always depends on individuals. In general, no, I don't think there is any wrong in expressing. Also, I don't think there is anything wrong in sharing, as long as we are not trying to force someone to believe in something with their but I don't feel there is anything wrong in sharing your understanding, your knowledge, something which is helpful to you, could be helpful to them. But of course, trying to force them will be a negative. Not only others, I mean, even your children, even your own family, you know. But I don't think there is any wrong in sharing the knowledge or your experience or how we understand. I think that there is, I don't think there is any problem in that, just sharing. I think with the other things, I think, you have to understand your situation. If it is really, you offer this place, and you want to help, and that is wonderful because it's driven by a good intention to help, provide them the space and everything. But then that intention, then eventually if it's bothering you so much and making you kind of, then maybe that is where you have to find a balance. And it shouldn't lead you to be so upset and disturbing and bothering with that. By offering that, it should make you joy, happiness, to be able to that, to be able to offer the space, to be able to offer the food, to be able to offer the, to be able to offer the your time, cooking and everything. It should give you joy, happiness, peace, to being able to that. But if it is instead bothering you, because now I can't study, I can't practice, it's taking too much of my time, and then your mind started to get negative about the whole thing, about them, about the whole giving the space and time, energy, everything, and about yourself, then I think then that is where you have to kind of take a time and reflect, contemplate more. Is that what I really want? Because then on one hand, you are trying to help. On another hand, then it is really disturbing you, and it is, instead of making you happy, joy to do that, is making you a very unhappy. And that, then I think that is where I think the motivation is there, love, compassion, but I think it is not the true unconditional love and compassion is there at the moment. So I think that is another thing. If you really enjoy doing that, that itself is practice. That itself is practice. You don't have to think that you need to do something other practice, but of course, when we do it, we have to do so, not only with the intention, but I think when we have the right intention and when practice really good, I think then there is more joy, happiness in doing that. And I think when we are able to do with that kind of thing, I think it itself is really good practice. Itself is really good practice. But I think if it's disturbing, then I think we need to think about it more. Yeah, okay. Yes. Well, I think desire can have positive desire and negative desire. The negative desire is the craving. I think when it comes to English word, I think it is always a little bit complicating. I think the attachment, the way we use from Buddhist terminology and from Buddhist, when we talk about the attachment as a state of mind, then that is the negative. But I think maybe, I don't know, in West, maybe whether the attachment can be used in a positive attachment and negative attachment. So I don't know, I mean, the word itself. But I think when we talk about can, from Western terminology, can attachment be positive and negative? Yeah?
When a small child is born, it's very important that the mother and the child bond, attach. The word is used as attachment. If that doesn't happen, then the person is mentally ill for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm. So then it is a different different terminology, you know, because and what about craving?
Craving is always
okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the word that we are using, the right word which will be the more the craving, okay? Desire has both positive and negative is the craving, and the desire to achieve enlightenment, the desire to achieve liberations, or the aspirations, aspiring to achieve enlightenment, fully enlightenment or liberation. So these are positive. It is a state of mind which drive you to accomplish, but that doesn't necessarily mean the craving, the negative desire. The attachment, the negative attachment, desire, craving, whatever you call it, is a mental state. One, by cause, is driven, it is motivated by the ignorance, so it is negative in that sense. Secondly, the nature of the mind itself is mistaken because it exaggerates more qualities into the object than what is there. When you have when we say attachment in the negative sense, the attachment, the negative desire or craving, you can't see the totality of the object as it is. Or you can't see the wholeness of that. Your mind, that attachment, exaggerates more qualities into the object than that is there. So then from that perspective, again, it is mistaken and negative. It's not true to the reality. Whereas the positive desire can be driven by the wisdom instead of ignorance. And the state of that aspiration or desire or that mind does not exaggerate more quality into the object. It just understand as it is the actual qualities or actual state of the things or the reality of the things. So in that way. And then, of course, from the cause and from the consequences, result, then again, that negative desire, attachment, lead to the more painful, suffering state, whereas the positive desire, aspirations, attachment lead to a more positive consequences and not a negative consequences. So therefore, so that can be differentiated in that way. So that will be the last question this morning. Yeah.
You spoke about this transition from the small scope practitioner to the middle scope practitioner. So if a person is able to in their mind see samsaric pleasures as suffering, then we still have all these senses. So is there any way to transform with your mind that the senses can have a positive role in your life?
Mm-hmm. I think it's more than the senses. It is the mental thoughts or feeling which comes after the senses that is the big problem. I think the senses in general, it just get the informations, it just collect the informations, and then it pass to the mental mind, and then the mental mind is kind of one which filters good, bad, useful, unuseful, helpful, unhelpful, on the basis of attractive, unattractive. On the basis of that, then we have the feelings, pleasant, unpleasant feelings. On the basis of that, then we get into problem, painful experience. So I think it is more of changing the mental state than the actually. So if we can transform the mental state, I think even you don't transform the sense consciousness itself, I think it will not be a big problem.
Then if you transform the mental experience,
mm-hmm.
then is there any positive? Because if being a human rebirth is so positive and we have senses, so if you don't have this attachment to sensorial experience,
mm-hmm.
then the senses itself, then is this also you can utilize, or you just kind of not attached to that?
Not attached to the sensory pleasure, you mean?
To any sensory experience, but still, mm-hmm. can you use that in the path, the fact that you have the senses, or you don't use that? That's not at all something you use.
I mean, you can, in the practice, of course, we can use all the consciousness in the practices, definitely. But the attachment itself is not the sensory consciousness, it is mental consciousness. So, for example, I think through the sense consciousness, when I see these flowers, maybe the feelings might be better picture, maybe might give a better idea. The body senses, consciousness. I think when I touch something soft or very hard, and there is feeling of softness or hardness due to that body sensations, so, if we learn how to not to get attached due to the difference, due to being in touch with different objects of that body senses, then of course that wouldn't be a problem. But I'm not still wondering whether the sense can be really transformed into the path itself. I don't think so. The sense consciousness itself is the mental consciousness really that we can transform, and it is also mental consciousness which is kind of continue from one life to another. The sense consciousness will cease at the end of our life. So the sense consciousness does not follow into the next life. So there is definitely through sense consciousness, we can learn. There is a lot of things that we can learn and practice to understand the nature of mind, how our mind and how objects are related, how the mind and objects influence each other, and so forth. In that, from that perspective, I think definitely we can learn from those sense consciousness and like that. But in terms of transforming itself, just as the untrained, unsubdued mind can be transformed into trained, subdued mind, and this can be disciplined, I don't think the sense consciousness can be trained in that way. Thank you. Changjo semjo rembo che ma ye pa na ke kyo che kya wa nyam pa me kon le kon do pe wa shou.